plate a potential nugget.
In the book, you've spoken about 15, you've spoken about a few principles about getting the transition right. And I've also chronicled a few that didn't go well. And you've sort of posed a few questions around them. I used to be a recruiter at Egon Zehnder earlier for 6 years before I set up my coaching practice. So I was actually curious about maybe actually chatting with you on how the recruitment process works, even before we get into this, diagnosis of why things go awry. If we could talk a little bit about, how recruitment works as a board member and as an observer of transitions, apart from just the 15 that you've chronicled in your book. What have you seen about best practices in getting the decision right? When you looked at situations which have resulted in a good outcome, what about the decision process or the selection process have been worth noticing?
Well, I don't know. There is no mantra for this, obviously. Hmm. But in my track record is probably when I think back at all this, I mean, a couple of hundred CEOs appointments I've been involved with, not that sure. I made the decision.
Sure.
And my track record is probably only 50-60%. Whoever's fault it may be is not material. And when I reflect back on it, I ask myself, what could we have done better? And I have certain principles, which I presume may be of interest to this particular answers to this particular question. The first is, let a group of people take the call rather than a single person. Because there is a value to collective judgment as compared to single judgment. I'm not saying everybody must sit together. Mm-hmm. It might be sequential. But sitting together helps because you discuss. Mm-hmm. Sequentially, you just get a little cryptic note on a piece of paper which the HR department assembles. It doesn't give you the picture. That's the mm-hmm. first point. These are all, I'm going to state, some of them are absolute motherhoods. The second is, we tend to look for visible success characteristics. Track record, domain expertise, how many years of experience, answers to one or two clever questions with equally clever answers. I call those the visible. Mm-hmm. This is like trying to recruit somebody by looking at his face, his coiffure, his clothes. It's important. Go ahead, do so. But we don't step into the person's atma, may be too strong a word, but the inner part of the person. And it is that is more important. I call it the soft part, because if I get into atma and so on, I'll be stretching out of my territory. But there is a hidden part to every individual, which he is trying to suppress, he or she, and you are trying to catch. And you can do that only by simulating situations and discussing the reactions and not being judgmental that he's right or wrong, which we tend to do because we are in a position of superiority. We have to judge whether the candidate is recruited or not. But by saying, will that work for my situation? Right? And if I may use a cricket metaphor, because this may sound rather, what I've just said may sound a bit complicated. The cricket metaphor, a batsman can go to the crease and look for the field placement. Or he can look for the gaps in the field. Now, I'm not a great cricketer, but if different batsmen say different things when you ask them, how do you decide what to do and how to hit? But this is the way a recruiter should do it. He should look for the gaps in the field rather than what is in front of him. Mm-hmm. And that way you get a slightly better situation. The third and the last point I would say is discuss. Because a number of people are involved in the recruitment, but usually we leave it to some superior god in the hierarchy to decide. And we get seduced by the person's domain experience and by the person's, those are necessary conditions, but not sufficient conditions. The EQ part of it, if to use the jargon, are also necessary conditions, but not sufficient. But the IQ plus the EQ is what makes for very good recruitment. Mm. And that's what I would say is one of the things that came out in the crash book, in each of the 15 cases, and I'm not saying it's the CEO's fault, that I was not in the fault business, is there was a mismatch of cultures. If you see how Chris Wiebacher was selected in Sanofi, as an example, I'm taking out of the book, and how he was fired. You can blame the board, the very French board of directors. You can blame Chris Wiebacher for being a very typical Anglo-Saxon North American. You can blame the acquisitions that he made. Those are all the visible things. But ultimately, the board of Sanofi sought a non-French-oriented international manager of competence. They found him. And when he started doing that, they fired him.
And maybe picking up on one of the things you said, Gopal, you know, often companies end up hiring leaders based on their intrinsic potential or competencies or whatever the language, right? Sort of the inner qualities and not so much on the expertise or prior industry knowledge. There I find an interesting dynamic play out, right? Often the board often has, or the recruiting, let's say the panel, the people who have visibility to that bet on something, but the organization often measures a leader on the clothes and the way the person looks. And there's often an asymmetry of insight into the leader. And it takes a while for the leader to build credibility. So back to maybe we'll get to the post, and I still want to be pre-decision. We'll get to the post-decision transition in a few minutes. But any reflection, when is it a bridge too far? How do you think about experience versus, let's say, potential, if I may sort of use those two words as black and white?
You know, when I was in Unilever, I must now relate it to my experiences live rather than theoretically. It is very rare, both in Hindustan Lever and in Unilever, to have a non-Unilever person recruited at the top level. They had such a rich and solid tradition of management trainees, direct recruits. They were all recruited by the time they were 25, 30. And then they were molded, hammered into shape as it were. Right? And at the age of 45, 50, when you had to choose your new leadership, they were known devils. In Tata, it's different, my experience. For whatever the reasons may be, a lot of parallel lateral recruitments were done. I was an example of that. And so were many others. And therefore, the whole issue of cultural fitment. Now, in Unilever, it was very difficult for a non-Unilever groomed person to survive. It was for the first time challenged 10 years ago when they recruited globally a CEO from outside. In fact, from Procter & Gamble and Nestle. But it all worked well. Okay, and since I'm not privy to how it all worked, I will not talk about it. But my experience is that the people who are pushing for domain knowledge and expertise are not wrong. And you must. But it is thus far and no more. Mm. And what you need is the cultural fitment and the visible fitment to match. So if you take a person who's totally innocent of power sector or automotive sector and try to put him at the head of that company, like a guy who doesn't know anything about consumer products, and you just recruit him from the diesel engine industry and put him into charge of Hindustan, you're going to have a starting problem of considerable significance.
No pun intended.
Sorry?
No pun intended, I said.
but if you find a guy who's got reasonable domain experience, but not the richest, but he's got terrific leadership and human values, that's the value add. And that's what we tend to miss. We tend to say, this guy's got terrific experience in my sector. And the human part of it, the HR department to look after, that doesn't work.
I do think there are three levels of looking at a person. One is the level of experiences and skills, often the CV view. Second is how the leader gets things done, which is the competency view. And the third is intrinsic potential, which is largely around what really energizes a person. While things like competency or potential seem like fuzzy topics, I do think there's discipline involved in discerning how a leader stacks up on some of these domains. But in searches, I've often seen that we tend to gravitate towards experience and miss out on looking at a wider pool of credible candidates who are high on competency and potential, who could come from a totally different domain. While there have been several cases of people moving across very different industries, one such example is when Ravi Venkatesan moved from heading Cummins in India to heading Microsoft in India back in 2004.
two very different industries, to say the least. One, a Midwest headquartered company making heavy engines. The other, a more modern Seattle headquartered tech giant, which was trying to make a mark in India. Egon Zehnder, the search firm I used to work with before I started my advisory practice, worked on this search. And here's a clip from Rajiv Vasudeva, the former global CEO of Egon Zehnder, speaking about his view on trading off experience with competency and potential, but with specific reference to that particular search.
Over the last 25 years, I have worked closely with CEOs and boards around the world in making the right senior leadership hiring decisions. What I've found is a deep-seated belief that experience is paramount, whether it be industry experience or experience of having done a similar role before. However, my personal experience suggests that hirings often go wrong, not because of experience, but mostly because of lack of competence or potential. In our profession, the saying goes, hired for experience, fired for competence or lack of it. Take the example of Ravi Venkatesh, who I hired as the head of Microsoft in India over 15 years ago. Ravi at that time was the head of Cummins in India, an asset-heavy industrial company. Now you could ask the question, why Ravi? What did he know about the IT industry or its sales and distribution channels? Why would he even be in the consideration set? Ravi, in fact, demonstrated several competencies that were very relevant for the person to be successful as the head of Microsoft in India. What Microsoft needed at that time was not an IT expert or someone who understood the various sales channels. They had many of those in the company already. What it really needed was someone who could bring all the various Microsoft businesses to work under one Microsoft banner and to work with the different stakeholders, government, partners, etc., to build a synergistic vision for India and then to translate India for Redmond. This is what Ravi had successfully done at Cummins. He had been the key to building a successful and enduring partnership with Tatas and with many local and state governments. He also worked very closely with the headquarters to create an aligned strategy for India, which he did very successfully. As he had done before, Ravi was a very quick learner and adapted quickly to Microsoft and its needs. So while experience is a key criteria, competency and potential often trump experience. It is important to widen the target pool of candidates because it is the one right candidate that can make all the difference.
It so turns out that Ravi Venkatesan happened to be on the Play to Potential podcast as well a while back. And here's his take on why Bill Gates took a punt on him at that point in time.
In fact, I remember when in my interview process, I got interviewed by Bill Gates, who used to then interview every person Microsoft hired. Mm-hmm. And so I said, Bill, I must be frank. I think you can find a better qualified person. I don't understand technology and all. He said, that's great. Maybe you'll listen. Mm-hmm. And he was exactly right. So I listened a lot before making up my mind, and I think that was really helpful because it was a very arrogant culture at that point in time. That The second thing I realized is that the team we had was high on enthusiasm and low on maturity. Mm-hmm. And so I had to build a very new team, a much better team, much faster, incredibly quickly. And I think that was really helpful. So as you make these transitions, quickly figure out who's on the bus, who's off the bus, and then get a core team of committed people around you. Mm-hmm. Because on your own, it's pretty tough.
Going beyond the superficial experiences, to really look at competency and potential in a disciplined and a systematic way can open up new talent pools and unlock significant value for your company. If this topic is of interest, one of my former colleagues from Egon Zehnder, Claudio Fernandez Arauz, has written a book on this. It's titled, It's Not the How or the What, But the Who, where he talks about hiring for potential in greater detail.
Thank you for listening. If you find this of value, do take a moment to visit the podcast archives at playtopotential.com. You might specifically be interested in my conversation with Michael Watkins, the author of the book First 90 Days on how leaders can settle in effectively in a new organization. You might also like the theme Settling into a New Context Relevant, where we learn from leaders across different walks of life on how they navigated the first few months in a new environment, including someone like Gandhiji when he moved back to India from South Africa.